Hi, I'm Tim Brody, and you're listening to Moving Forward, a podcast about relationships, community, and connections. This show features me. I was interviewed last year by Peter Stauffer, past MP for our local riding, and a radio host at 95.7 for a show called Hour of Heroes. It was a wonderful experience and a great opportunity to talk about the work that we're doing here in Halifax in support of the Society of Atlantic Heroes. I'm rebroadcasting this show with Peter's permission.
And I wish to thank the United Food and Commercial Workers Union tremendously for their great support of our program. And today I have an exciting show for today, folks. I've got a friend of mine, Tim Brody from Fall River, Nova Scotia, who's here today to talk about what he does. And I find him absolutely fascinating. Where I know him from, we were both volunteer for an organization called the Society of Atlantic Heroes, which is a group of people who are all volunteers trying to facilitate a facility here in Atlantic Canada where individuals who are suffering from a variety of injuries and their families have a safe place to stay while they're getting the treatment they so rightfully deserve. But before we get into all of that, I just want to introduce you all to Tim Brody. And Tim from Fall River, welcome to the show, and let us know about who you are and where you're from originally.
Peter, it's really, really great to be here and to hear you call me your friend. I think that's a pretty great thing, too. So the invitation here today is greatly appreciated, and I want to share with you a little bit about what's going on. My background.
Well, let's start off where you were born.
Sure, sure. It's kind of a journey. I was born in Quebec. I was born in Wakefield, right across the border from Ottawa. And only lived there for a couple years. And then when I was around two, my father brought my mother and my older brother and I to Hamilton, Ontario. And he dropped us off in a welfare apartment and disappeared from our life forever. And my mom was left to raise us.
That's hard.
It was hard for mom, but you know, kids don't know what hard is. You know, from our perspective, it was just life, wasn't it? And so I was raised in Hamilton. I really, really didn't do well in school at all. And in fact, it was something that. That became kind of an interesting story. You know, grade 12, when I got my grades, I'd failed five out of eight of my classes. I really was going nowhere. And my dad, who'd married my mom when I was seven, he encouraged me to join the military. And of course, any time that a dad gives a son advice or guidance, you know what happens. It takes about 2 years for that to sink in. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and so I finally did join the military when I was 22, and it really did change my life. But it wasn't a quick process. You know, I went through basic training in Cornwallis, Nova Scotia in 1983, and when I graduated, I graduated bottom of my course. My final course report said, "This man is a weak recruit and will never benefit the Canadian military."
Oh.
And so I took.
Well, two major strikes on you.
I got to tell you, it was an inspiration though, because I remember reading that report and going off on my trades training, and I was so incensed and so angry that someone would say that about me. I dug in my heels and I graduated from my trades training at the top of my course.
Well
and,
done.
And I got a picture of myself getting the. Getting the award.
But what turned that around, though?
Yeah, well, let me tell you. Sure. I got a picture of myself getting the award, and I wrote on the back of it, FU. And I sent that picture back to the warrant officer that had written my final course report in Cornwallis with no letter or anything.
Ooh,
and
that's a
years,
bit risky.
Yeah, years later, as I matured, I never heard from that warrant officer after we received the letter. After we received the picture, so I don't know what the impact was. But as I matured, I got to realize that I probably intuitively had a sense of what his response would be, because I'm willing to bet that fella opened up that envelope, saw the picture, and smiled and said, knew he could do it.
I was just thinking that in the back of my head.
That knew he could do it.
Probably what you needed was a swift kick under the arse, as they
That's
say.
That's exactly what it was.
And he gave it to you.
He did. Wow. He did. And so here was this kid who no one thought would ever achieve anything. And yet I ended up in the Governor General's house, being inducted into the Order of Military Merit, the second highest order in Canada. Right. And it was because this fella, whose name was Warrant Officer Montreal, said, I would never achieve anything. He inspired me through his words and actions, and that's where I ended up.
Well, let's go from that journey then, from your training course to the Governor General's. Let's go through that process.
Yeah, it was.
How did that work out?
Yeah, it was. You know, one of the things that I realized about the military at the time, you know, I didn't realize all the gifts that I was really being given. But at the time, what I started to realize that the military is the kind of environment where you really get to explore a whole number of things. So many people think that the military is a place where you just learn to shoot guns and kill people. It really, really isn't about that. The military is a place where you learn about the deepest of core values. What does service mean? What does honor mean? What does courage mean? You know, those were the kinds of things I was starting to learn as I went through my 30-year military career. And I think that the greatest opportunity for me to explore what that meant and what it means then to be Canadian came when the military gave me the opportunity to serve overseas. And I had that experience in the Golan Heights.
What year were we talking about now?
1987. So brand spanking new into the military and just learning to explore all these core values. Learning to take pride in a uniform, learning to see value in symbols. And so off they sent me to the Golan Heights. It was an interesting time to be in the Golan because that's when the Intifada started, the uprising. And I remember well when it started because it started with a squadron of hang gliders that came out of Lebanon. Hang gliders. Can you imagine? These fellows flew out of Lebanon on hang gliders with like these 10 horsepower motors attached to them, and they landed at a camp just down the road to from us, and they attacked the Israeli defense camp just down the road from us, and we heard the gunshots and we went to ground and the majority of those fellows who they labeled as terrorists were killed. A couple fellows escaped on their hang gliders. Off they ran down the road, and they took off. But I remember having the experience of leaving Canada, you know, to get away from it at arm's length, and to see then what it meant to wear a maple leaf on your shoulder from an outsider's perspective. And to see how we were held in such high esteem simply because of where we were born and how lucky we were, really impacted me. And I remember coming home with a different sense of worth and a different sense of purpose. And so when I came home, my goal then as a young fella in my late 20s. Was to start raising awareness of the great work that Canadians do and to start sharing stories.
Now, is home still Hamilton?
No. You know, is my home still Hamilton now? No. You know, sadly, Mom and Dad died. And now, for me, home is Halifax. And Peter, I think you know what it means to be dispossessed of home and to reinvent that term. Mm-hmm. And it really was difficult for me when Mom and Dad both died to realize that there was nothing linking me back to Hamilton, you know, the place that I'd grown up and
sure.
had developed pride. But when I opened my heart purposely, and I mean that, to open my heart purposely in Halifax, and let it in, I realized what an incredible place this is. You know, this is a fantastic city, full of warmth and love and community. But in even the nicest places, we still have room to grow and opportunity
sure
to share.
We are, yeah.
And so initially, back in my 20s, when I came home from that experience overseas, I thought I need to start trying to share and trying to enhance and trying to amplify that experience I had outside mm-hmm. of Canada, so that the people can start having more gratitude for what they have here. And so I remember I created a project called Cookies for Soldiers.
Cookies for Soldiers.
Cookies okay. for Soldiers, yeah.
I've never met a soldier yet that turned down a cookie.
That's exactly right. And so every year the Girl Guides were selling cookies. And I thought, you know what?
Yeah.
There is not a soldier outside of Canada who should not get a cookie during that experience.
I have not heard that, but you're right. Everyone deserves a good Girl Guide cookie.
That's exactly right. And so what I did was I started linking Girl Guide organizations up with units that were outside of Canada. And I think it lasted for about 5 years. But for 5 years, when the Girl Guides were selling cookies, I'd raise the money to pay for them. And then every single Canadian serving outside of Canada got a box of Girl Guide cookies, including the fellows up in Alert. And so it started creating relationships and bonds, and the kids would start to hear the stories from the soldiers serving overseas. And I thought that's where we needed to be, you know, and it was all through stories.
What a great idea.
Yeah.
Well
so
done.
Thank you. It went on for about 5 years, and then my career started to really amp up, and I started to get moved around, and I couldn't keep the continuity for it, but I knew that when that happened, we were on to something. And so years later, when I was posted, I'd spent 20 years here in the Atlantic region, found my wife, and that's an interesting story of itself as well. You know, I can trace my family roots back to the year 460 AD. And when I trace them back, long story short here, Peter, but when I trace them back, I find that my wife's family and my family live together in Nova Scotia. And so while my wife is from Nova Scotia and I was born in Quebec and raised in Ontario, our families have been interwoven for 2,000 years. So I just had to come to Nova Scotia and find that girl. And I did. And after 20 years in the Atlantic region in my career, I was commissioned and then posted to Trenton, Ontario.
Right.
And in Trenton, I became the adj at 436 Squadron, the administration guy. I was taking care of all the things in the squadron that didn't have to do with flying. So the guys that were flying, they could focus on that. And it was at the same time that the Afghanistan campaign was really, really ramping up. And I have to tell you, the guys at 436 Squadron do what they do better than anyone else on this planet.
I've heard that, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. And 436 Squadron, for the folks that don't know, is a Herc squadron. And their history goes back to 1944 in the Gujarats when they were flying Dakotas, dropping supplies to troops trying to kick the Japanese out of Burma.
Yeah.
Well, they played an integral part in the Afghanistan campaign, and they were dropping supplies to troops directly into contact with enemies, which means that the bullets were flying and the missiles were being launched. As my colleagues, friends, and heroes flew a big, fat, juicy Hercules aircraft low and slow.
It's an easy target.
Yeah. And they were making sure that they were keeping the guys on the ground moving forward and moving strong. And they just do it so well. So I was working with them, and I was working with their teams at the same time as I'd been trained to be a coach and a mediator. So I was working with the teams that were deploying in support of those missions as well. What's really, really cool about that is that we were using interpersonal skills, communication skills, and relationship skills to start increasing the effectiveness and efficiencies of teams in high-stress environments. In fact, we deployed the very first team in the history of warfare with an embedded collaborative communication skill set, specifically designed to increase effectiveness and efficiencies. Mm-hmm. We did that in Trenton, Ontario. I was part of the training team that prepared that group to go overseas. And what we found was that we not only increased their effectiveness and efficiencies, but we decreased their operational stress injuries. We were increasing their latent stress capabilities by increasing their communication skills. So I knew we were on to something really, really important. Sure. And the feedback that we got from that, one of the fellows that came back from deployment said that not only were his skills effective at increasing the team overseas, but when he had his first phone conversation with his wife back home, he noticed how those same skills were increasing their relationship capabilities. And I remember that the story that he shared with us. Anyone, Peter, anyone that gets posted overseas knows this to be a truth. You'll be on the bus on your way to the airport. I mean, you're not even outside of the city yet when a number of things will happen. One of the things will be that one of your kids is going to fall off their bike and break their arm. The water heater will explode. The roof will start to leak. Everything at home that can go wrong will go wrong, and you won't even be out of the country yet. So this guy was overseas in his first week, and he got the phone call home, and he was talking to his wife, and he said, "How are things going?" And she said, "I'll tell you how they're going." She said that the kid broke his arm, the water heater won't work, the roof is leaking, the furnace exploded. That's how things are going here. How are things going there? And he said intuitively he knew that what she was talking about had nothing to do with the kid, the water heater, the furnace, or the roof. What she was saying to him was, "I'm doing your work so you can explore a dream. Mm-hmm. You need to say thank you." And so he said he had the conversation that he should have had rather than the conversation that was manifesting itself, so that when he went back to work, he could focus 100% on the task at hand, knowing that home was just fine. And he said to her, "You know, baby, you're the strongest woman I've ever met in my life. I really appreciate everything you're doing so I can be here. Thank you so much." And he knew that was it. That's all he had to do. So when he told us that story, we started realizing that we had more work to do. It wasn't just about working with the military teams. It was working with the home front as mm-hmm. well, the most underserved element of yeah. the military family. So after we had those successes in the military, I retired. I was medically released. I had some of my own issues.
And how many years of service complete?
30 years. Yeah, my last 10 years as a commissioned officer working with teams deploying in high-stress situations. Mm-hmm. And
so what year was that then?
That was in 2012. You know, my last day of work.
Recently, yeah.
Yeah, my last day of work, November the 10th, 2012. I got to tell you, that was a hard, hard, hard time for me.
Would have been tough, yeah.
Yeah.
No question. No, because if you look at, first of all, the time, November 11th following up.
Yeah.
And November 10th, you know, the rumors of November 10th, 1918 were something's happening here. This war may end sooner than mm-hmm. we think. And then you realize 100 years later, 100 years plus later, here you are ending your career.
Yeah. Well, even more profound than that, though, Peter, because in the military, when we take our uniforms off, we're not legally allowed to wear them again.
That's right.
So I was taking my uniform off and hanging it off the day before Remembrance Day, never to be able to wear it again.
Not legally, no.
No.
I know a lot of guys still do.
A lot of guys do.
Yeah.
But I have to tell you, to think or feel like the organization blindly did that, it was really, really a hurtful thing.
Yeah. Okay. Well, yeah. We're going to be right back then with part two of our story with Tim Brody here when he talks about what he did after the military. And we'll be right back with the Hour of Heroes. You're listening to CIOE 97.5, the voice of East Coast music. Thank you.
Hey, I'm Cecil, inviting you to join me each Friday night at 8 o'clock right here on CIOE 97.5 FM and on the internet at communityradio.ca. I'll give you a pulsating hour of some of my favorite old school dance tunes. That's Moving and Grooving on Friday night at 8 o'clock right here on CIOE 97.5 FM.
Community radio with a difference. Making a difference. CIOE
97.5, the voice of East Coast music. And you're listening to the Hour of Heroes with our guest today, Mr. Tim Brody. And Tim is just telling us that in the last sequence that he had just left the military on November the 10th after 30 years of service to his country. And so now, Tim, the question is, what happened after? I know what happened November 11th. What happened on November 12th?
You know, it was
Tim Brody.
Yeah, thanks for asking. November the 12th started kind of a long process for me because at the time I didn't realize it, but I'd just left something important. You know, when I say to you that my uniform was hanging up in the closet, I'm not speaking about a trite event. Mm-hmm. You know, for me, it was more than just a piece of clothing. It was emblematic, and so I had to start reinventing myself.
And before you carry on, I've heard this from a countless number mm-hmm. of men and women that have served a variety of organizations wearing a uniform. Mm-hmm. The day that uniform comes off, in many ways, is an end of a lifestyle. Mm-hmm. And it's difficult for them to transition, whether you're in Coast Guard, whether you're a correctional officer, yep. a paramedic, to transition to what we call regular civilian life.
Yeah,
and you've experienced that as well.
Oh, it was a really, really, really tough time for me, and it was that notion about trying to figure out who I am. Mm. You know, who is Tim Brody if not this person in uniform? Who am I? And it's interesting as well. My wife commented on it that the very first time she met me, I was in a uniform, and she asked me who I was, and I said my name's Tim Brody. And she said it really impressed her that I didn't introduce myself by my rank because that's not what my mother named me. You know, the queen, she named me my rank. So it wasn't that. It wasn't, you know, the element of rank. It was far deeper than that, Peter. It was something at the subatomic level. And I really had to figure that out. And it was a tough time for me.
And what was your rank when you left?
I was a captain. I'd gone up through the ranks. I'd started as a private, went up through the ranks, and then was commissioned and retired as a captain. But for me, it was that notion about figuring out and remembering what the military had taught me. You know, what were the core values that I stood for? And that's really who I was. And, you know, it wasn't the uniform anymore. It was those core values, and with gratitude, I had to recognize that the military honed them and polished them and helped me realize that. So I had a consulting firm back in Ontario, and I was doing quite well. And the RCMP called up. And
a consulting firm in what regard?
Yeah, in leadership and team building. So okay. I took those things I was doing in the military, started doing them outside the military. And then I was doing quite well, and the RCMP called up and said, hey, listen, would you come down east and do those things that you were doing for the military for us? Now, here's the thing. When I say quite well, I mean quite well. Financially, it would make no sense to come here. But I'd promised my wife that the last move would be hers, and she's a good Nova Scotia girl, and so I said to her, baby, you know, we've got an opportunity to move to Nova Scotia. And she said, well, pack your bags. And I said, now, hang on a second. If we go to Nova Scotia, here's what's going to happen. You know, I'm going to have to work.
She didn't care.
No, I'm going to have to work 12 months to get 6 weeks off, or we can stay
good.
Here. I can work 6 weeks to get 12 months off. No. And she
overtime,
said, well,
I don't care. Work all the overtime you want.
Yeah,
right?
Pack your bags. We're going. And I didn't, you know, there are times, Peter, when I know you look in hindsight and you think, there was no better move than this. At the time, it would have been hard to convince me that sure. this was a good move, but there was no better move than coming here. I mean, it really, really wasn't. So I spent about 5 years working with the RCMP. Now, here's what I want to share with you about that experience, because it was the last piece in the puzzle for me. It was the last strong epiphany about what I was given from the military. When I started working in the RCMP, I thought there's going to be so much that's similar. You know, a military environment, a paramilitary environment, there's got to be a lot that's the same. What I was startled by was the differences. Now, here's one of the differences that I've come to realize, and I know that military folks that are listening to the show at first blush are going to grate on this, but stay with me. The military is not an operational environment. There's the grate.
I can hear the grinding of the teeth now.
That's it. The military is a training environment that goes operational. The bulk of my time in the military was spent in training. In fact, in the first 20 years of my career, I counted it, and I spent over 20 weeks learning specifically about leadership traits and how to build teams. After I was commissioned, in the commissioned officer corps, the training around leadership becomes intense. So the military is a leader, is a training organization that goes operational. They do a lot of training. The police environment is an operational environment that tries to squeeze in training. That's a huge, huge, huge difference. And so what I started to see was that while in the police environment, there were good leaders, the organization itself couldn't claim the credit for their development. Good leaders in the police environment had the good fortune of being mentored by someone who had natural traits, or perhaps they had natural traits themselves, or they spent their own money to go back and take on the training. But in the police environment, they really didn't emphasize a great deal on leadership and relationship building. And so I started to see that final piece, the gift that I'd been given from the military that I didn't appreciate at the time, was the leadership development that I'd received. And so I started applying that in a police environment. After 5 years, I partnered up with Fonce McNeil. A lot of folks in Nova Scotia will recognize Fonce because he's a hero. You know, he was the fellow that wrote the McNeil report following the June 4th incident where the three Mounties were killed. Mm-hmm. He's always been a strong proponent for building relationships and building teams, specifically in a police environment.
And you're referring to the Mounties in New Brunswick.
Right? The three Mounties in New Brunswick, they're killed, yeah. Yeah, and of course, you know, there was the big lawsuit after that, and Fonce ended up on the stand talking about some of the shifts that need to happen. And of course, we're starting to see some of those shifts try to be applied within the RCMP now. But in a police environment in general, Fonce and I then partnered up, and we created something called the Police Leadership Development Academy, where now we try and offer the opportunities for those leadership development skills in all first responder communities. So, you know, while the label says police, you know, we're working with fire, you know, anyone that's in that kind of paramilitary setting, including emergency first responders. So that became our focus. And then, of course, I got tied in with the Society of Atlantic Heroes with you. And that was a really, really great opportunity, too. A fantastic organization doing great work supporting that community that Fonce and I are now working with. And so the tie-in became natural. I had thought what we needed to do was to host a TED Talk here in Halifax, yeah, where we could bring everyone together and start talking about the things that we were learning about increasing latent stress capabilities, decreasing operational stress injuries.
Right. And just for those who are unaware, TED Talks have been around for quite a while now, and they bring in experts from a variety of fields from around the world. It was on television, and of course now it's on the internet, and you can just pull it up, TED Talks. Mm-hmm. It is an amazing, to me, I call it the Economist and the National Geographic verbally.
Yeah,
you know, it is an amazing, amazing show on any subject.
Yes.
Carry on.
Yeah. So I applied for a local TED license so that we could together a show here in Halifax, yeah, and bring in all those key speakers to talk about post-traumatic growth instead of post-traumatic stress.
Great point. Great.
Yeah, and talk about increasing latent stress capabilities to decrease operational stress injuries. The goal of the event was to support the Society of Atlantic Heroes so that we could raise funds for them as they try to build and increase the services they offer to our first responders and military veterans. I was turned down by the TED folks. And the reason I was turned down, they said, was because TED Talks can never be used to support a single organization, no matter how worthy that organization. And of course...
I see that.
Yeah, well, you know, I was heartbroken at first, but what I've realized is that all of the challenges I've had in my entire career have always been redirections of energy. Because about a month after I'd finished licking my wounds from being turned down by the TED folks, this other opportunity came up. And the other opportunity was Mo Mondays Halifax. Mo Mondays is a monthly event that takes place. And this monthly event is where a group of storytellers come together. And six storytellers, and we go to the Carlton in Halifax, and people share stories.
The Carlton, for those who don't know, is a wonderful long-time establishment here on Argyle Street,
yeah,
right in Halifax. And the folks who run and own the Carlton are tremendous community builders. And
absolutely.
They allow many, many Nova Scotians from many walks of life to have their opportunity to sparkle, as they say.
Absolutely. And so the Mo Mondays that we're hosting now, we have 4 to 6 storytellers once a month, and one of those storytellers will always be someone from the first responder or veteran community who wants to talk and share their story around post-traumatic growth. The whole point is to normalize the storytelling experience and to have the community at large hear about these heroes that we didn't know or we're rubbing shoulders with every day. It leads to the ultimate big event in June, where I rented the Scotia stage in Neptune Theater, and we're going to be bringing in some of the best storytellers you've ever heard, specifically that full day, talking about post-traumatic growth and their experiences and the things we can do to enhance post-traumatic growth. The participants in that show, the folks that'll be in the audience, we're inviting all the chiefs of police, the fire chiefs from the Atlantic region, the first responder chiefs, Coast Guard, military, and veteran community folks to come and sit down and gather and hear stories and share their stories. You know, it's in the storytelling part that we find our sense of community again, which is one of the key enablers in recovering and in switching the conversation from post-traumatic stress to post-traumatic growth, finding that you actually fit and you belong.
Excellent. I tell you what, we're going to hear a lot more about this right after this commercial break. And you're listening to CIOE 97.5, the voice of East Coast music. We'll be right back with our guest, Tim Brody. Thank you.
It's East Coast Morning from 6 to 9, Monday to Friday, every weekday. Right here with me, George Jordan, on CIOE-FM 97.5.
Hi, this is John Gracie. Join me Sunday evenings at 10 o'clock for 2 hours of wonderful jazz music right here on 97.5 Community Radio.
You're listening to the Hour of Heroes on CIOE 97.5 FM, brought to you by the United Food and Commercial Workers Union.
CIOE 97.5, the voice of East Coast music. I'm here today with my friend and special guest, Tim Brody, who's going to regale us on something really unique called Mo Mondays. But before we start, you have a show in April, another one in May, and then another one in June, sort of a larger one. Let the audience know what dates they are and where they will be.
You bet. Thanks, Peter. Yeah, the April show is the 29th. Of April, the May show is on the 27th, and then the big show is on the 24th. So the April and May show are at the Carlton.
At what time of day?
They start around six-ish. I'm Air Force. Yeah. You see, Air Force background. They start around six-ish, and they go to nine-ish, and yeah. Typically it's you know you go to the Carlton and enjoy the ambiance and soak up some of Chef Delante's new menu. There is he's off the hook. We've got those two shows in April and May, and then the June show is at the Scotia Stage in Neptune. And that's going to be a full day.
What time is that?
That'll start at 8 o'clock, and we'll be gathering for breakfast. And that'll go straight through until around 3 in the afternoon.
A full day.
And what it's going to be a unique event because it's going to have four speakers in the morning, and then there'll be concurrent workshops. So the folks that are attending can hear what the speakers have to say, and then kind of go in and spend an hour with the speaker that they like the most, and really kind of dive in deeper to what they've learned along the way, and how they can help, how their lessons can help their teams out. And then in the afternoon, we've got Roger Brown coming down from New Brunswick. Now, if you don't know who Roger is, he's a pretty cool guy. He was the commanding officer of the RCMP up in New Brunswick on the 4th of June when those the three folks were killed and two folks were injured. And he's got some really, really important lessons to learn or to share. And what it was, the way this is going to be structured, he's going to be able to give a chat on what that experience was like for him. And then we've got a military fellow coming in. Now, I don't want to share with you who the military fellow is right now because we don't have him locked in and booked, but that'll be done by this Friday. But it'll be a senior military fellow with incredible experience from Afghanistan. Mm-hmm. And Roger Brown. So they'll be our two keynotes in the afternoon. Then after that, they'll be sitting down at a round table with Ken Hoffer from the mm-hmm. Society of Atlantic yeah. Heroes, and they'll be having an informal conversation where they'll take questions from the audience. And the focal point will be if you could go back to one day before that event that happened for you that gave you this mental health injury and pass advice on to that younger person, what would you say to them? And so,
great question.
And so it's about taking these experiences and turning them to opportunity for growth, and then sharing them with first responder communities and other folks in the community that want to see that in our culture, we walk with heroes, and all we have to do is sit down, take a deep breath, and listen. And the stories they share with you have profound lesson and meaning for everyone. And the experience that they had are a thread in the tapestry of our community. And they belong. They fit. And they enrich who we are as a whole.
Now, you said something, and I say it all the time. In fact, the show is called The Hour of Heroes.
Mm-hmm.
But you know as well as I do, because you served 30 years, you're one of my heroes, but you don't refer yourself as a hero, and no. You know that everyone you relate with, they adamantly refuse to be identified as a hero.
Yeah, that's
true. It's just something about their innate nature of, I call it Canadian modesty to the extreme.
Mm-hmm.
They don't identify themselves as heroes, but I just want everyone to know, I don't use that term loosely.
Yeah.
You provided, for 30 years of your service, the security of which my family was able to do what we needed to do. It always reminds me of a story, I don't know if it's true or not, of John F. Kennedy, when he had made the Man on the Moon speech in 62, he went to what was that before, I guess NASA at that time, and met an African Nova Scotia gentleman who I believe was in janitorial services at that time, and said, "Sir, may I ask what your job here is?" And the response was, well, Mr. President, my job is to put a man on the moon. And what that said to me was that his job was to clean the floor at the washrooms and everything else so that everybody else can concentrate on what they're doing.
Yeah.
By you providing the security that I required for myself and my family enabled me to do my job and my family to do their job. Mm-hmm. And so that's why I call people my heroes.
Yeah.
And so even though they are reluctant to want to do that, but you had a good way of terming it as well. When you had a friend of yours that you called a hero and he got quite mad at you for that. But you said something to him I think that really resonates, and I'd like you to share that with our audience.
You know, Ian Hope, and I have to tell you, wherever he is right now, I know his ears will perk up. He's a good Nova Scotia boy. And in Afghanistan, he was a lieutenant colonel. He was a task force commander, and he was a warrior's warrior. And he had a situation with a fellow by the name of Ibrahim. Now, Ibrahim was a Taliban leader. He was responsible for the IEDs that were killing Canadians. And Ian Hope was, of course, responsible for the teams that were hunting and killing Taliban. You know, two men further apart you wouldn't find. And yet, when Ibrahim was captured, Ian Hope did something remarkable. He went to the hospital and started visiting Ibrahim. CTV reported on this situation because after 6 weeks of conversation, Ibrahim asked for the cameras to be turned on, and he looked into the cameras and he said, "Hey, Taliban, listen up. You should put down your rifles and come in and talk. These Canadians are really, really good people. We can talk to them." Of course, the Taliban didn't watch a lot of CTV, so the message didn't have a huge impact on the war effort. But the message is, or the lesson itself should not be lost. You know, when we have people like Ian Hope who exemplify everything, I mean everything that's good and stereotypical about what it means to be Canadian, that tells me that that's my hero. And you know, his nobility, his strength, his courage, his ability to see beyond the immediate and to see future possibilities, nothing compares. So I had the opportunity to say that publicly to him one day. He was giving a presentation in Kingston. And I stood up and I said, you know, sir, you're one of my heroes. And he stopped me almost immediately. And derided me for saying that, you know, heroes were the fellows that didn't come home alive, and he just
understandable
ran roughshod over me. And afterwards, in privacy, I remember saying to him, you know, here's something I want you to know: hero is not the term that we ever aspire to; it's the term that's conveyed upon us by other people. Because in everything that he did, he became my North Star. Mm-hmm. And so it was that notion of when I'm stuck with a difficult decision or choice to make, what would my North Star do? That's my hero. And Ian Hope became one of my heroes. And so I think that when we start really exploring what that means, what does the term hero mean? Which is something Canadians don't do well. We really, really don't. You know, if I ask the normal Canadian, tell me who's your hero, very few of them will know. You know, down in the States, they seem to do a lot better job at it. But in Canada, our humility kind of makes us move away from that. But we need to think for a moment. Who is your hero? And the more we ponder that question, the more we'll start to realize how many North Stars are surrounding us. Mm-hmm. And when we're faced with our own tough decisions and choices to make, we can rely on those North Stars to guide us home. So really, at the end of the day, that's what Mo Mondays is about. It's about revealing our North Stars. It's about sharing stories so that we start to see the greatness that's surrounding us. By the way, the other aspect is that June show at Neptune Theater, not a cent of the money goes into any of our pockets. It's going to be a big show, $150 per person for that show, but every cent is going to the Society of Atlantic Heroes. And that's the notion of creating this place where our first responders, our military veterans, our serving military folks can come home, can realize that the work they do is so appreciated. And to give anyone else that's in our community needs to take a deep breath the opportunity to come and see, we're surrounded. We are just surrounded by heroes. Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
So go ahead. That date again in June?
The date in June is June 24th.
It's at the Neptune Theater.
And you can get information on the tickets at MoMondays, MoMondays.com/Halifax.
And Tim, if someone wanted to get a hold of you, you seem like a person that has a published number, if you believe in phone books anymore. How would they get a hold of you, Tim?
Oh, gosh. You know, you can find me online at www.thebrodies.ca. That's one of my businesses. Or heck, you can just give me a call. 997-1721. And I'm always available for a chat or anyone that's got a good joke.
You need the area code.
The area code is 902. Yeah, that's right. We do. Yeah, do you remember when you just had to give four numbers?
I know.
Yeah, it's 902-997-1721.
Well, Tim, I want to give you the last word, too. You said something that Lester Pearson once said. I'd like you to just say it again.
Yeah. Well, look, it wasn't Lester Pearson, it was Jordan Peterson.
Oh, sorry.
And he recently said this, and this is really, really important.
Right.
You know, we focus so much on individual rights and freedoms these days.
As a Canadian, yes.
Yeah. Peterson says this, your right is my responsibility. So we underemphasize the flip side of that coin. You know, we all have our individual rights and freedoms, but we also have our responsibilities. We have responsibilities to each other, to our community. Your right is my responsibility. So I think that this whole notion about giving back, it's not something that's nice to do. It's essential. It's crucial. And I really appreciate you giving me this time today, Peter.
Well, Tim, it is myself, our radio station, CIOE 97.5, our producer, Ron Goyash, and all of our listeners who appreciate taking time out of your busy schedule. And I want to, first of all, thank your family for sharing you with all of us. Mm. I know that your wife is your North Star, too.
She is.
Probably your East-West Star well. Or as I would say, the Aurora Borealis of your life.
I'm glad.
And I want to thank you so much for coming in with us, and thank you for the great work you do in promoting mental wellness and post-traumatic stress forwardness in many ways in this regard. And I can't thank you enough, and it's an honor to share with you as well the opportunity to work together on the Society of Atlantic Heroes. Well, Tim, thank you so much. I wish you all the best. We'll be right back with CIOA 97.5, the voice of East Coast music. Thank you.
This is Kayla Borden, and I'm the host for Woman in the 902, airing every Friday at 9 p.m., on 97.5 FM on CIOE Community Radio.
Community Radio with a difference. Making a difference. CIOE FM 97.5.
I wish to thank very much Tim Brody for coming in today and out of his very busy schedule to share with us the things that he is doing in many, many ways to continue on his military service without the uniform. His Mo Mondays and his experience and his training has led him to assist many, many people out there. And his efforts of coordinating people together in a unified voice and talking about the strains and stresses that men and women who wear the uniform of Canada go through and their families is really exemplary. And I want to thank him so much for continuing on that great work. Because I know his training and his thought process and the way that he carries on his own life is an example of how we should all live our lives, folks. That when you're done your career in whatever field you have, it is time to give back. And it's not just something you like to do. I think if we all, as all of us as Canadians, took the time to deliver some effort in volunteering back to your community, to your province, to your country, this country would even be a much better place than it is now. So I want to thank Tim and his organization very much for the great work they do. I encourage all of you to give him a call. And look up his email that he left before for us. Attend his Mo Mondays events. They're every Monday, and fantastic what he does. And his efforts and his work for all of us is truly welcomed. And I do thank him very much, and I thank him for being with me on the Society of Atlantic Heroes, a great organization as well. He also wanted to play one of his favorite songs from a group who probably is one of the finest bands ever to perform rock and roll of any kind, Steely Dan, and his song, Ricky, Don't Lose That Number. So that's what we're going to play, folks. I do want to thank all of you for listening. I thank Tim very much for coming on board, and especially I want to thank Ron Goyash, our great producer, for putting on the show today. Again, folks, have a listen to Steely Dan's Ricky, Don't Lose That Number. And always remember, folks, never regret.
You've been listening to Tim Brody in the show Moving Forward, an offering in relationships, community, and connections. You can see us once a month at the Officers' Mess at RA Park, where we share real stories and real inspirations. Get all the details about our next show or tickets from our site at www.momondays.com/Halifax. Remember, we are proud to support the Society of Atlantic Heroes, the group caring about first responders, veterans, and military members in Canada's Atlantic region. It's about our community, and our community is about us. Thanks for listening.